On 4th and 8 again, this snap is low. The punt is away. A much better kick, a high wobbly spiral from the 13, Mariani. Looking for room as he comes left to the 20, to the 25, to the 30, to the 40. Midfield needs a block, 40, gets it. 30, 20, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Titans! Goes 87 yards, and the Titans are on the board.
Welcome to the OTP, the official Titans podcast. Mike Keith and once again, Amy Wells.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm well.
I'm good.
How are you?
Oh, splendid.
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 Is it because of our special guest?
It is, kind of, yeah.
Mark Mariani. Welcome to the OTP.
I'm so honored. Thank you, Amy. I appreciate that very much.
It's very exciting. This is an exciting day for us.
I know. It's good to be back. What a crazy new building you guys have over here.
It's nice, huh?
This is great. They've really done things around here to pick it up a notch, and you can tell right when you pull in. So I'm excited to be here. I had the butterflies when I pulled in. I was like, man, I took this drive so many times in my youth.
You are a two-time Titan, so, I mean, you shouldn't be nervous about coming to St. Thomas Sports Park.
No, it was more excitement back in here, back in this building where all the magic happens. It's just good to be back and good to be back with you guys.
How long have you been back in Nashville?
That's a good question. I have been officially back in Nashville only a few months. I spent all last year, 2017, training like crazy, and I do that all out in California. And so I lived out there for the season, waiting, you know, hoping for a phone call and being a free agent. And you know, unfortunately that didn't come. But when it was time for me to, flip the switch off and hang up my cleats and really get in the mindset of I'm done now. It was like, early January. And then that's where the decision to sit down and figure out the next step came. And that's, for me, it was pretty obvious that I needed to be back in Nashville.
Was there a light bulb moment when you knew it was over, or was it a gradual thing?
No, it was a tough year, to be honest with you. It was a tough year mentally. I mean, physically, I was training and in the best shape of my life. You know, it basically started my regular off season after finishing the season here in 2016, end of the year, whatever. Started my normal off season as a free agent like I always do. In February, March, whatever. But then it just kind of continued to drag out and drag out. And you never knew, when the call would come, if it would be after the draft when people didn't get the guy they wanted, or maybe when OTA started, they have a couple roster, positions open. Or once that didn't happen, then the next step is, a mini camp, and then they get summer break, and all these dates on the calendar went by, and they were all on there, and I anticipated every one of them. And so, whatever first day of OTAs, you're going, all right, well, week leading up, you're like, all right, I'm training for this. Anyways, it was a long year, mentally and physically, but even deep into the season, I still had a little bit of hope that something would happen. My agent took phone calls and was reaching out all year, and things were very close in a couple different situations. But sometimes you don't get to choose. The business and the game decides for you when it's time to hang them up. And once the season ended, it was pretty much an easy call for me. I didn't want to go through that again. And that's where I decided, I need to be back in Nashville and start the next chapter. And Here we are. Very excited.
In wanting to start that next chapter, why was Nashville the place that you decided was the place you need to be?
It wasn't something that I can really describe. I mean, obviously the city from day one, since I landed here in 2010, has been so amazing to me. The people, the organization, everybody in the Middle Tennessee area has really, brought me in and taken really good care of me. I thought about a few different places and obviously going back to Montana is pretty high up on my list. My wife's from California, that kind of stuff. But when I just thought about the best opportunities for me and where it made the most sense, it was here in Nashville, which has become my home really since I moved to the big city from Missoula, Montana in 2010. I never thought I would live in a city this massive of Nashville. This is crazy. They have, skyscrapers here, whatever. But it really became my home. And even when I was in Chicago or training in Cali, I always kept my place here, and I always considered this my home. It's where I, lack of a better word, it's where I grew up. You know, I got here when I was 23 and have been here ever since. So I just love this city so much. There's so much going on, and it was an easy choice for me.
So when you sit down and you start thinking about what's coming next for you, what is your, I guess, adult real world job going to be? Can we call it that?
Yes.
What are you thinking about? Where do you even start in that process?
It's a hard process. The real world is not, it's a very scary place. And although for the last, 20 years of my life, I've been doing a job, playing a game I loved, it just didn't feel like a job. And so I know and I knew that I needed to find something that I loved, that I would be able to get up in the morning and be excited about. And I came back here and I sat down with a lot of people, a lot of mentors, a lot of people that are close to me, people that, maybe had an industry that I wanted to check out, or people that had some wisdom to impart on me or things like that. And so I kind of went through a few different areas, went and checked out a couple different jobs or whatever, different industries, different markets, and I loved it all. It was all really exciting. But at the end of the day, real estate for me is where, something that I really love, and it's all I wanted to do. Even when I was taking those other meetings, I was, still playing in the real estate world, and I've been investing in real estate on the side of my career since 2011. And so it's something that I enjoy. And it's something that I've had a little bit of success in. And so when I started the process, I ended up wanting to get my real estate license to do my own transactions. And during that process, which took a few months, I just realized, I love this and I want to be able to, help people. And I know people in, that were in my situation, had to move a lot, this and that. It can be a pain in the butt, but I'm excited about the fact that I can maybe be an asset to somebody in their lives. And so I'm going full steam ahead, going to be selling real estate. My wife got her license too. We're going to start our own little team, joined with Village Brokerage just as of a couple weeks ago. And, hit the ground running, full steam ahead.
Were you a business major in college?
I was, yeah, yep. Management, marketing, and that's what was crazy to me, honestly, is that I, walked on, and then late round draft pick, all that stuff, always kind of fighting an uphill battle, but in the back of my head, I always had a plan already in place that, man, once I'm done, I'm going to have no problem with this transition. It's going to be easy because I'm prepared and I have my degree and whatever. So I sat through NFLPA meetings, every year. They do a really phenomenal job of trying to get guys ready because it is a challenging time. It's a very weird thing for it to just be all of a sudden shut off. But I thought, man, I am going to be more prepared than anybody. I have all this stuff going for, and I'll tell you, it was not the case. I mean, I got smacked in the face by the real world, and it's only been a few months, but it is very different. And so, I fall back on that degree and fall back on that preparation. But, I think the big thing for me is that I'm going down a road that will be new and interesting, that I'll have to learn a lot. I'm going to spend hours and hours the next couple months just only in training, just doing boot camps and stuff that they make us do over at Village. And, but I feel like it's something that I'm very passionate about, and that at least will fill a little bit of the void of missing, the everyday world in the NFL. And so that was important to me.
Did you flip houses too? Because Mike Keith is a really big HGTV fan.
Huge.
It's a real thing.
Are you serious?
I love HGTV. Someday I would like to host a show on HGTV.
That
would be my dream.
I think you especially know plenty of people. We can make that happen. But I did a flip last year.
Okay.
Actually,
did the work yourself or hired?
No, okay. I didn't. But actually, it's funny. I was in Chicago, saw this property when I was playing in Chicago. Saw this property. Pulled the trigger, and then, it's one of those things where I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I knew what needed to be done, but then you just kind of jump into it and you learn how to do it, and then flipped it last year and ended up selling it. But once again, one of those experiences that kind of, when I look back on going, man, that was really fun. And I don't know, you know, it was a lot of work and it was a pain in the butt for like 90% of it, but it was something that I really enjoyed. And so those experiences kind of helped push me, but I do love HGTV as well.
Not to get too personal, did you make money on the flip?
I made a really good number.
Really?
On it. Yeah, it was kind of unheard of what happened, but I put it up for rent, actually, is what happened. And someone came in and said, hey, we see your places for rent. We're showing a condo in the same building. Do you mind if we show yours as well? And I said, well, it's not for sale, but you can show it. And then they ended up loving ours. And so I said, well, it's not for sale. So if you want it, it might cost you a little more. So I think we set a good high record in that building for price per square foot. It was pretty crazy.
Michael Griffin was in here and just after he retired and was talking about the cupcake shop that he has with Brian Arakpo just outside of Austin, Texas, and how that is filling a big void in his life, trying to move on to the next stage. And it's so good to see former players who are able to jump into something, because the change in life is, you know, not having the guys around, not having somewhere to go every day, not having the regimen that you're used to. You know, a lot of guys face a lot of depression going through it, and it seems like the year you had last year almost got you ready for this next move, so maybe you can avoid some of that?
Yeah, maybe so. I think you nailed it right on the head, though. I mean, I know everybody echoes the same thing, but everyone will miss playing the game. But what I miss the most is the locker room, the day-to-day, the relationships, the guys. There's absolutely nothing you can do to ever replicate that. There's just nothing. Now, the adrenaline of standing under a punt, you know, and about, you know, big guys trying to take your head off, that'll be a tough thing to replicate as well. But at least maybe there'll be some adrenaline moments in the business world and that sort of thing. But the relationship in the locker room is huge. The structure, the regiment, like you said, as soon as that shuts off and now you're just on your own. There's no more dates on the calendar. There's no more OTA report date. There's no more phase one, phase two. There's no more Watterson sending you workouts to do in the off season. You know, there's no more of that. And you're going, you know, I've had this structure in my life since I was in sixth grade, you know? And so that is a hard thing. And like I said, I thought I was very prepared for it and I still battle it. It's a hard day-to-day thing, but you know, it is something that you have to find something like Griff and Arakpo. You have to find something that you really enjoy. And it's funny, I didn't know that Griff was doing it. It's funny to see that it's cupcakes, but I love that. That's really great. And it's just, you know, you take it as your own and you try to give it the best you can. And there's a lot of similarities that go with, you know, just the daily grind of preparation, the work you have to put in, all those little things, you know, on the football field that go into now this crazy business world that I'm jumping into. And, you know, I don't know anything, but I can try to prepare my butt off. And, you know, when I walk into a, you know, listing presentation, I'll hopefully be able to deliver a good product and help somebody out.
When he referred to the locker room, Mike Munchak used to call it the boys.
Yeah.
And I remember having the discussion one time with another media member who just thought that was ridiculous. These men are grown men. They're paid professionals. They're, you know, they're 30-something years old. And Mike Munchak is calling them the boys. And I said, have you ever been in a locker room? Were you part of a team? And this guy said, no, I wasn't. And I said, well, then you can't really relate to that, because when you're in a locker room, no matter how much you make, no matter what level you're at, no matter what kind of car you drive or what you do, you go back to junior high school. It's the same feeling as being in a locker room with your friends, and there's nothing in life that replicates that.
Absolutely not. I don't know. You know, it's something that's so unique.
Yeah.
And if you just laid it out on paper and you said, okay, there's 53 plus, you know, there's 60 guys all in their early 20s to, you know, late 30s or whatever, and you're all just, you know, working toward the same common goal, but you all have, you know, too much free time and too much, you know, everybody's got the better jokes and, you know, there's a lot of craziness that happens, but it's, you just sit back and look at it and go, that will literally never happen again. I mean, you just can't, there won't be a situation like that unless you're part of a team, unless you're part of something greater than yourself. But it's also, it's like, the locker room setting is such a different, it's not a boardroom. It's not a business office with cubicles or whatever. It's not a, you know, a TED Talk room or whatever. It's a locker room with guys who are grinding and working their butts off and just trying to have a good time in the process. And yeah, it's going to be tough to replace that in my life.
There have to be a lot of skills that you picked up having spent such a long time in football that are going to really help you, maybe give you a bit of an edge when you're selling real estate or doing whatever you're doing, right?
100%. And I think football or any team game kind of gives that to you. And that's something I've come to really, really appreciate over my years. And you know, when you look back, you go, wow, I mean, for all the frustration that the business of the game has given me the last year or two, that I was so, you know, so frustrated and so mad, you look back and you get time to think about it and you go, wow, I mean, I've learned so much, you know, hard work, perseverance, overcoming adversity. I learned the other day, I was going to this presentation actually with a commercial real estate investor, and I thought to myself, all right, I don't know anything about this, but all I know is I'm going to pretend that this is game day. And what would I do if this was game day? So the days leading up to it, I just prepared my tail off and got as much information, looked at as many comps, as many things. And I just, with the night I went, you know, before I went to bed and before the meeting, I just thought to myself, you know, it's a different kind of preparation. But it's still something that's been instilled in me that if I prepare and I, you know, do what I need to do leading up to it, then the game day, which is a listing presentation now, is a lot easier. And definitely, you know, along those lines, a lot of other things that are paralleled in the business world that you just bring along with you. And there will never be a day in my life that I don't think about a certain situation in football that is translated into other parts of my life, just because it's ingrained in me.
Well, Amy and I were preparing for Mark Mariani to be here today, going back through your career, and I was having some fun going back through 2010, your rookie year. Mark Mariani myths, by the way. Myth number one, that you're a small guy.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
You're a small guy compared to defensive tackles, but you're nearly 6'1",
yeah,
190 pounds. There were these people that had the vision of Mark Mariani being 5'7", you know, 155 pounds.
It's the, no offense to my boy, but it's the Wes Welker comparison.
Sure.
That's what it always is. And he revolutionized the game, so I'm not saying. But, yeah, definitely I've gotten that before, for sure.
I bet people meet you and they go, whoa, I thought you were smaller.
Bigger than I thought
you
were,
yeah. Yeah, well, hey, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other myth, and you touched on it earlier, that you were an undrafted. You were not an undrafted.
Nope.
You were taken number 222 overall in the 7th round. There's a pretty good story about you being drafted, too, wasn't there, involving Brandon Fisher, Jeff Fisher's
yes.
son, your former teammate?
That's right. Do you want me to tell? Yeah.
Tell
yes,
it.
Please.
That was one of the best days of my life, by the way. I graduated from college.
Wow.
And then the draft, it was 3 days back then, if I remember correctly. And maybe it was only two. But I had a room full of people from my graduation party that were there. But like you said, yes, I was a 7th-round draft pick, number 222, tailing off near the end of the draft. And so by the time I got my name finally called, it was just me and my parents. And and that was a very, very special moment. And I had the special label Crown Royal sitting there ready for us that my old man drinks. He had it prepared for that moment. But so what happened was during when you get to the late part of the draft, teams that were kind of had you as a prospect or were looking at you, they'll start calling you, because if you make it to free agency, then you get to choose where you want to end up. The decision goes on to your end. And so they'll start calling and saying, hey, we're not going to be able to pick you up, but if you make it, you know, we'll have a great opportunity here, yada, yada. This is all stuff that's leading up, you know, has been talked about leading up into the draft. And now it's all materializing late 6th, early 7th. So what happened was I was getting phone calls left and right from a bunch of different teams, and kind of at that point, you know, all right, they're probably not going to draft me now, so stop calling. Like, no, there's still some time left. But what happened was, all right, I'm great friends with Brandon Fisher. We played together at the University of Montana. We're in the same class. We became very close. And he called me and said, hey, how you doing, man? And I said, I'm freaking out. Totally freaking out.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I'm freaking out, and I, I'm, you know, fielding all these calls. I just got off the phone. Actually, it was with Dallas. I just got off the phone, and, you know, I have a good feeling. They had another pick coming. I have a good feeling that, you know, they might take me, whatever. He was honestly probably just calling to check on me as a buddy. Our other friend had just gotten drafted in late in the third, and so we were all in a group text. But anyways, it was a pretty normal phone call, but I basically, the gist of it was, I'm freaking out. You know, I'll call you back later. You know, my phone's ringing off the hook, but, you know, thanks for checking in or whatever. And then, you know, a couple texts went by, but then he actually called me. He called me and told me, hey, man, how you doing? I said, dude, nothing's changed. I'm tripping out, you know, whatever. I'm sweating. I'm in a bad place, whatever. And he goes, well, guess what? You're going to be a Tennessee Titan. And I said, dude, this is not the time. I'm like, and I started, you know, I threw some explicits in there, and I'm like, you know, you dirty dog, you know, mm-hmm. This is not the time to be messing with me. You beep, beep, you know, call me back later. This is not funny or whatever. And then, turns out I was on speakerphone.
Oh gosh.
With Coach Fish and the whole front office, and Coach was like, hey, what's up, man? Yeah, he's not lying. We're going to draft you with the next pick. And I was like, oh, hey, guys. Wait, this is the whole front office as well? Oh, no. And so I was like, my apologies. We had all met before, but I'm like, oh, okay. And then from that point on, it became kind of a joke. But and when it sunk in, it was definitely one of the greatest feelings that I've ever felt. But in that moment, I was just like, oh, okay. You know, he tripped me up a little bit. But so one of my best friends on the planet got to call me and tell me that I was drafted, which was really cool.
That's so cool. But in your defense, they set you up. You're going to speak to your best friend way differently than you're going to speak to your future boss.
On speakerphone.
It's dirty. Yeah, it is. I get that. I'm on your side.
But it is so Jeff Fisher.
Oh, man, it was so good. And Reinfeld and all the guys that were in there, they didn't hold it against me. They thought it was pretty good. But I think the first phone call is what really set that up, because he knew that I was on edge. And then for him to be able to do, anyways, it was really good. We still laugh about it.
In looking at your rookie year, from that phone call and being drafted 222 all the way through, I can't think of many more bizarre, wild, up and down rookie years that people have had in Titans history. Because here's a guy, okay, let's do his highlights right here. Kickoff return against the Denver Broncos for a touchdown. Punt return against Washington for a touchdown. The following season, a punt return for a touchdown at Carolina. Those were the three touchdowns.
Yep.
Back to the rookie year, though. You start off like a house of fire. The team starts off like a house of fire.
Yep.
Philadelphia game, Kenny Britt torches the Eagles in the fourth quarter, catches 225 yards worth of passes. Team is 5-2, goes to San Diego, ahead in that ball game 19-7, getting ready to run away with that game, lets that game get typical San Diego. Let's not even talk about that. Yeah. Anyway, and from there, you win just one more game. And then the Vince Young thing happened.
Yep.
After the Washington game. Coach Fisher's gone after the season, after they announced that he was going to return. I mean, wild.
It was crazy. And I already told you a little bit of my small town, you know, coming out of moving to Nashville. And so I'm already wide-eyed, you know, coming in. And I was very, very, very fortunate. And I've come to appreciate opportunities in this business even more. But because back then I was like, oh, this makes sense. I should be the return man, you know, whatever in my head. But, you know, it was so fortunate for me to fall into a place that needed a return man, first of all. I mean, how many seventh-round guys make it at all, and then, you know, get to play, you know, hundreds of snaps and you know, whatever. So fortunate for that situation. But you're right, the year was just chaos. I mean, it was bonkers. I remember I was at the Pro Bowl when I got called that Coach Fish was getting let go, and that's really late in the game for a coach to get let go. And so there was all that going on. the Heimerdinger thing.
Oh, it was awful.
We had to change offensive coordinators in the middle. I mean, it was a really crazy year.
Yeah, let me go back to that. Mike Heimerdinger diagnosed with cancer in season, and
yep.
he is still trying to call the plays.
Yep.
That season is falling apart. Vince Young is hurt. And the thing happens where he throws his shoulder pads in the stands, and then there's the thing that happened in the locker room and all of that. Randy Moss is here.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
That's just
Randy
enough.
Moss is
Randy
here. Moss is in your room.
Randy.
You're a rookie in the NFL. Dude. Hey, you're a long way from Harv Montana at the point you meet Randy Moss in your room.
That was one of the – he's still he was only here for 6 weeks maybe or something. That he's one of the greatest people, greatest teammates I've ever been around, and I love that dude so much. But talk about like a little bit of starstruck or like in awe. You're talking about first ballot Hall of Famer, one of
in my
opinion, just because he's my buddy, one of the best ever. And you're going, this guy is now just hanging out. I remember giving him some Marshall jokes because he beat the Montana Grizzlies in the national championship. And so he thought that was pretty funny that I was like, instead of introducing myself, I kind of was like, oh, great, you know, beat us in the 95 national championship. So he thought that was funny. But, yeah, I mean, all of this is going on, and, you know, I'm just trying to figure it out. You know, as a rookie, it doesn't matter if you're a first-round pick or a free agent or whatever. You don't know the ropes. You're just trying to make it and figure it out and, you know, get to meetings on time and whatever. And then meanwhile, success was happening on the field, and it was just, yeah, you're right. It was chaos.
Do you have a favorite Randy Moss story as a teammate?
You know, one of my favorite, it wasn't while he was here. He definitely taught me a lot. I mean, he made me stay after with him after practice. He made me get up on Tuesdays and come work out with him because I was a rookie and we get Tuesdays off. And I thought, perfect, love a good day off. Days off are beautiful. And once he got here, he's like, no, man, there's no days off. And I'm like, okay.
You can even do the Randy Moss voice.
That Randy Moss voice might be my favorite thing I've ever heard.
No, it's Deep South. No, he's, you know, it's like Monday, and I'm like, yeah, but I usually like to go have a couple beers on Monday, Randy. Like, and Tuesday, what do you mean? He's like, no, we'll be working out by 7 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Me, him, Watterson, and Damian Williams, and he made us come in every Tuesday. And at the time, I almost took first couple of times. I thought it was, you know, punishment, and then I realized this is what a you know 10-time Pro Bowler, best ever. This is how you get to that point. You know, that's he kind of helped me get to that point. And on the field, he taught me some things that I still hear in the back of my head. And he was just fun to be around. Now, he didn't come out here and kill it for the Titans on the as far as
couldn't
he didn't
run
have
anymore,
a
could.
Yeah, he couldn't he didn't have a lot of he didn't ha, you know have many catches or anything, but it would being around him is enough for me. But one of my greatest moments is he was doing an interview on Fox, and he was asked who his favorite teammates were, and I don't know if I was just on the top of his mind or what, but he threw my name in there.
Wow.
And name dropped me as one of his favorite teammates of all time, and I was just like, he's like, oh, a small town guy from Montana. He was like, you know, whatever. He elaborated a little bit, but I was like, you know, immediately my phone blows up and everything. And I just love the dude, man. He's been so good to me. So good to me.
Being back in this building, there have to be a ton of memories that are flashing through your head right now. Do you have one or two that are at the top?
Oh, man. Yeah. I've spent so many hours on this field. I mean, I've, you know, gotten sick. I've had glory moments out there. I've had good times and bad. And I just, we're over here overlooking the practice fields right now. And it's just, you know, so many hours have spent out there and just memories of, you know, what you do when you're in this business is 95% of your life is spent. Well, more than that, 98% of your life is spent in the locker room or on the practice field or whatever. Game day is like the easiest part of the job, you know, and that's what everyone sees. But meanwhile, you spend thousands, countless hours in this building and in the weight room and on these fields. And I mean, I can picture thousands of moments. I can't pick any out that are, you know, any better than any of the other ones. But I see these guys over here catching out of the jugs when we pulled up. And it's just, you know, things like that. Like, you know, I won't be, unless I go out and get one, I'm not going to be catching off the jugs again, you know? Like, I used to be a beast. I used to, you know, so It is a lot of amazing memories, to be honest with you. And to come back here, like we talked about when you came in, and to pull in the gate and to kind of see how the full parking lot and everybody's out here working and sweating, you know, it's just, you can't replace it. It's just unbelievable feeling. And I was honored to be a part of this team, and definitely will never forget these moments.
Mike, do you have a favorite Mark Mariani moment? Because yes, that was beautiful, but, you know.
And it's not one of his touchdowns. Dallas, boom. Texas, 2000,
he beat me to it.
2010.
See? Mike wouldn't let me down.
The Titans had outplayed the Cowboys all day. Tony Romo got sacked and got run over, and yet he brings the Cowboys back to tie the game. And the ensuing kickoff return, Mark Mariani, 73 yards to set up the game-winning score. Chris Johnson had a great day. There were a bunch of, you know, big plays in the ball game. I mean, it was really exciting. That was a very good Cowboys team.
Yeah.
And at that moment, when you broke that kickoff down the right sideline,
yep,
and set up the game-winning score, I mean, that was to beat them at Texas Stadium in that way at that time. I mean, if you're – I grew up a Cowboy fan.
Yeah.
And if you grew up here, you picked a team because there was no team close by.
Yeah.
Yep. So you're a Cowboy fan or you're a Steeler fan or you're a Packer fan or you're a Raider fan, whatever, you know, that's how you did it. And for my hometown team, now that I have a hometown team, to beat that team, yep, which I had on such a pedestal, that's one of my favorite wins ever.
Well, I think that my first touchdown, of course, but that moment for me was one of the most special moments because it was such a pivotal play in the game.
Huge.
It was late in the fourth, and I hate to say this on air. We might have to edit this out, but I actually got face masked by the kicker.
Yes, you did.
Because he was an All-American linebacker who tore his ACL, and then he started kicking. So he was a stud.
The guy from USC.
That's correct. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
His name's slipping me.
Yeah, his name's slipping me right now, but I thought I had the angle on him, and he got me barely by my face mask. But yeah,
Bueller.
Bueller. Yep, that's right.
Bueller was his name.
Yep, wow. That's correct.
Bueller.
Classic.
Knew it was coming.
But yeah, so we get set up inside the five or something, and then, you know, I still got a lot of flack from the boys for this from back home. But the headline the next day is the Chris Johnson game-winning touchdown. Like, wait a second. No, hold on a second. How do we get there? Does it say how we got down the field?
I didn't forget.
Yeah, no. But to be honest, and not only that was it America's team, but it was also the brand new Jerry's World.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if it was the inaugural season, but it was the first time we had been there.
Was it that?
Yeah.
Were we there?
Yeah.
I thought it was Texas Stadium still. Wow,
oh, no,
okay.
No.
It was
in Jerry's World.
Okay.
Yeah. So in this.
Well, that's 100% right because we went there earlier, and that's where the backup punter hit the jumbotron.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you're right.
Well, and what's crazy about that stadium, and you can see it if you watch Cowboys games, but the sun at that hour comes in and it blinds you because it's just all the windows. It's about as bad an angle as I've ever had to catch punts or kicks. The stadium in Jacksonville might be number one, but this one is terrible. And anyway, I caught that ball up off my shoulder because I couldn't see it. And even Coach Fish, after he wasn't, you know, he was excited. He was smacking me, but he came up and got in my helmet and he was like, no one will ever understand how hard it was to catch that ball. And I appreciate that, you know, whatever, because
wow,
he knew, because he's a great returner himself.
Sure.
But that was a very, and so once I got it and shook off the whatever they're called, the lights in my eyes, and took it down that right sideline. I mean, that to me is a special moment, and like you beat me to it, but that one is up there with my first touchdown of all time.
Scarier to return kickoffs or punts?
Good question.
I think punts. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk, and I saw the rule change just recently about the danger of kickoff. The danger of kickoffs is not as much as with the returner as it is with the guys flying down the field and the guys standing there blocking. I got a lot of love for guys that do that and make a career out of that because that can be a brutal gig. But when you're standing under a punt, you don't know where everybody is. You're not really sure, and you could be lit up at any moment. And I mean, it's just there is nothing like it. And it's scary is the wrong word because I have a few screws loose. I actually like that feeling. It's like I got there's something wrong with me because I stand back there and I've taken my licks, but definitely standing under a punt, and especially one that's hanging up there, and you start hearing guys huffing and puffing around. It's just, it's too good, man.
Will you bungee jump?
Oh yeah, I
don't mind. So you'll bungee, you'll ride roller coasters.
Oh yeah,
this is you.
Oh, a special kind of crazy.
You were made to be a punt returner.
Well, I don't know what you know. I get asked that a lot. Is what how did it come to? How did you get what made you so good at it, or how did you get so good at it? Because as a player, you know, especially in college, you're returning kicks, but I was a focal point on offense, and so you're just. That's what you're focused on a lot. And so, you know, the special teams gets, you know, just a certain percentage, small percentage of the day overall to prepare. So, I mean, you don't, it's not something that is in anybody's forefront, you know, until you get that to that moment where that is your job only. But, you know, it's like, it just kind of started. I was fit for it. Kind of, I didn't mind getting hit. I didn't mind. It didn't scare me to get hit. And, I had a great coach in college, and then when I got here, Coach Fish was phenomenal at teaching techniques, and so standing under punts and being able to kind of be fearless a little bit, and because what happens is you get guys barreling down on you, and you get a little nervous, you get alligator arms, but being able to be a little bit fearless and learning great technique from guys that, you know, help me out, really was the reason that I was able to prolong my career and be a return man. And, you know, we're sitting here today. And so just a good ride, fun ride.
You've had kind of a gnarly injury in the middle of your career. You snapped your leg, for lack of a better term.
I looked at it again this morning.
Yeah, it was tough.
I watched it today, too.
When you look down and your leg is going the other way, it's not great.
Well, what was crazy about it is that I was returning a punt. I stuck my left foot in the ground. It got snapped like a tree wood, piece of tree wood or something. You're breaking for a fire or whatever. But I didn't feel it right away. And everybody in the pile was like, just yelling, "Trainer, trainer, we need a trainer." And I'm like, whoa. I mean, everybody. And I'm like, dang, somebody must be hurt.
But it was not an unusual looking play.
No, it wasn't. Exactly right.
Because on radio, we didn't know what had happened for a few minutes because, I mean, you got tackled, you fell over, you were way away from where our broadcast position was. But it was not, it wasn't anything where you immediately said, ooh.
There's a problem.
Exactly right. Yeah, 100%. And I didn't even know either. I mean, I kind of felt something, but that. In that moment, I thought, dang, someone must be hurt because they're yelling. People are yelling for a trainer. I don't know what happened, but I'm at the bottom of the pile, you know, kind of figuring out, you know, making sure I still have the ball and all that stuff. And then I look, all right, in that picture, there's a couple pictures or of some video of it. I, like, reach down and grab my leg and sort of pick up my leg from just below my knee, and my foot just flops over to the side. And then and then it started hurting. And then I'm like, it's me. I'm the one. I need the trainer. I need somebody to get over here immediately. And I'll never forget. Elrod comes running out.
Dr. Elrod
comes running out. And Brad Brown. And Brad, our trainer, our head trainer, yes. He gets up in my face, like in my face. Like, so I can't even move. I can't see anything. And I'm like, even in that moment, I'm like, easy, bro. Like, back off close. Just a little bit. Like, what's going on? And what happened was Elrod was right behind him, and he just grabbed my foot and set the bone right there. But they knew that Brad knew he couldn't prepare me for that. Like, hey, we're going to set it, whatever. He was just making sure I didn't, like, lose it when that happened. And then once he got that, and so for a while after, Brad and I would laugh about that too. Because, and once he did that, I'm like, get me out of here. Because then the pain started really setting in once he said it.
What happens the moment they take you off? And what do you remember about what happened? Because, I mean, it was August 23rd, 2012, start of your third year. The crowd was, you're a crowd favorite. You're a Pro Bowler. Titans fans love you. I mean, everybody's just sick. And
yeah.
I mean, so you're going out of the stadium. How fast do things start happening medically at that point?
Well, what happened was that we got in the ambulance. They gave me my cell phone, which was thankfully. But once we got in the ambulance, they gave me some meds. But what happened was they took me to the hospital. And the worst part about the whole thing, well, we did the x-rays and everything. The worst part about it was I was taped. My ankles were taped. And so they couldn't really see it. And once they did all the x-rays, but they didn't want to take the tape off because then the swelling comes in, then you can't get good x-rays, all this stuff. Once they cut the tape off, which was the last thing, like, all right, we're done, we'll take the tape off, they realized that the bones had come through the skin.
Oh.
So that sends you to emergency surgery immediately.
But there's a good news, bad news situation in that. You didn't see that, right? Did you see it?
I didn't see it. I didn't see it like you'd be thinking of it. They showed me at that point the bone was set. So there's something that I saw that I can't, the anatomy part slips my mind, but I can't describe it. But it was weird. It was a weird looking injury at that point.
Were mom and dad at the game?
No, they were not. They were in Montana, and my mom was freaking out.
I bet.
Big time. So they were on the plane the next day, and I have so much love for, you know, Titans organization because they always left somebody with me, and you know, everybody came to visit, you know, from the GM to the head coach to the assistant GM, everybody. So until my parents got there. But, yes, yeah, so at that point, once they saw it broke the skin, I had to go to emergency surgery. And, you know, what's another crazy part is emergency surgery, once you have a bone that shatters like that, it's basically just carpentry, putting it back together. So there's pins and screws and needles.
Still?
Oh, yeah. Nails and plates and a rod through my tibia and all that stuff. But never was casted, started walking the next day. Like,
seriously.
Crazy. Started rehab the next day, which is just crazy to me. So those guys are the best, you know, and took great care of me. And so then the biggest obstacle in my life starts, and, you know, you don't have a choice.
Who or what got you through that?
Oh, man. I don't know what it was. There was a lot of things. I think this building was part of it, and that's why I love the people in this building so much. The amazing support that I have, you know, throughout the state of Montana and in Middle Tennessee. You know, I got so much, you know, love and support from schools and people sending cards and stuff. And, you know, I just feel like, you're not given a choice. It's like, okay, well, you get to either sit here and start your rehab and be diligent and do the things that you need to do to get better. You have to teach yourself how to walk again, which is not fun. Or you can just, like, sit around. What's the alternative? There isn't one, you know? So once I stopped feeling sorry for myself and being angry that it happened, it was like, well, dude, you only have one choice. So I got the pleasure of spending lots and lots of hours with the training staff, all the great people down there, and it was, you know, a very hard fall for me. And, but, you know, I just knew that, you know, it's not something that you can cut corners, take shortcuts. If you don't do the first phase of it correctly, it'll screw up the fifth phase, you know? So it's like, you just got to do it. And, you know, I talk about learning some life lessons. Being through that, it'll teach you some patience and some perseverance and some, you know, just discipline and, you know, just picking up marbles with your toes for hours at a time. It's just, you know, you don't have it's not a lot of excitement going on. So, but learned a lot from it, was able to come back and play. And so all great things and, you know, just got to learn from adversity.
When you come back and play, do you lose some of that fearlessness that you need to have to be a returner?
How do you not?
Yeah.
It's really a better question. Maybe to me, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think, and what happened to further the story, if you remember, is I actually had to spend the next year on IR as well. I had to go get multiple cleanup surgeries in my leg, and that was probably more frustrating because I felt like I was healthy, but I really wasn't. I needed to go. I went out to some specialists, some foot and ankle specialists. I ended up doing my surgery in Vail, Colorado with the Olympic ski team guy. And
because, of course.
Well, yeah.
Who else?
Well, yeah. No, exactly. It's like, hey, here's a couple free trips out to Vail. Okay, perfect. You got to do surgery and some physical therapy, but whatever. But anyways, yeah, it just, you know, what I think, I played that preseason, and I think more than anything, what I wanted to do was I wanted to get hit again, and I wanted to get hit on my leg again. And I'll never forget, I got crushed, and it just was like a, it was not a, I didn't get rolled up, it was just a direct helmet on my shin, and nothing happened. It hurt like heck, but nothing happened. I'm fine. It's not going to break. Chill out, dude. Go do your job, and it's all good. And once I got hit and once I got rattled a bit, it was business as usual.
Do you remember people cheering for you when you stood back there to catch your first? I remember.
Yeah,
I do.
I mean, it was it was one of those moments that makes you love sports.
Yeah,
because those people were with you. They were they were catching the kick with you.
Well, if you know, you want to talk about why I feel so strongly about this city and this organization and this area, it's because of how much love that they've given me. And, you know, I could never repay all those people for doing that. It's just, it was special for sure.
The best part of being a professional football player outside of the locker room that you'll miss?
Oh, man. I mean, game day, obviously. I mean, that's an easy answer, but you know, there's something about the locker room, it ties in, but there's something about just selling out and doing everything you can to achieve a common goal with your peers. And, you know, that'll correlate in the business world, and there'll be things that are similar or whatever. But for a bunch of guys who have one sole focus, and that's to win, and, you know, obviously win a Super Bowl ring and that stuff, but just to win on Sunday, you feel like you're a part of something bigger. You feel like you're a part of, you have a purpose, and you have a goal, and you can't do it alone. You can't do it by yourself. And it's just like, it's such an amazing feeling, a fulfilling feeling when you're doing your part to be successful on Sundays. And those are small things that just, like we talked about earlier, there's no replication for that. You just can't.
What are you most proud of in your football career?
Oh, man. On the field?
Whatever.
I'm most proud of the way that I think people receive me and how they feel that I conducted myself off the field. I loved being out in the community. I loved doing stuff on Tuesdays. I love going to the hospital, and I love, you know, seeing all that. Those are things that, you know, I will reach out now that I'm back in town and try to get involved in again. On the field, you know, just you know, succeeding, seeing all the hard work pay off, you know, being able to set goals and expectations for myself, you know, coming from a small town in the middle of, you know, Montana, and being able to, you know, accomplish tiny goals along the way to ultimately achieve this greater success, and never going, I didn't start as a walk-on and go, I'm going to be a Pro Bowler. That's what I want to do. I'm like, shoot, I just want to make this team this year. And that's how I started when I got drafted here. It's like, what's the goal of a late seventh round draft pick? It's to make the team, you know, to be great, to be able to be a part of the game plan on Sunday. And so to be, have been able to set those goals and to achieve them, those are what I'm proud of on the field, to be able to overcome some odds that, you know, I've gotten to. There were a lot of people better, you know, more athletic, bigger, faster, stronger, but you got to put it all together sometimes and be given the right opportunity. And so those are things that, you know, I think when I do get frustrated about, you know, not being able to play anymore or didn't get the call last year, in those quiet moments when you're being able to reflect on it, you go, all right, you know, you have some stuff to be proud of.
Do you ever see yourself coming back to football in some capacity, whether it be as a coach or doing some media stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I miss it. And I definitely think you need a break from it, especially, like I said, I was a little frustrated as a free agent last year, and I needed a little break from it. But then the season goes, and then you know, I still thought I would be a part of the 2017 season somewhere. And so then when the season ended, and then, like I said, I turned the switch and hung them up, and then I was like, oh, I don't miss it that much. It's fine. And then when OTAs kick back up and the guys are reporting back, and I'm living in Nashville now, so I see a couple of the dudes, and I'm like, all right, I missed this game, and I'm going to definitely try to be a part of something. I don't know if coaching is in my near future, but in some way, shape, or form, I will want to stay a part of it and you know, be around the team and be around the guys. And it's, like I said, it was an honor to be a part of this organization, and I'm going to do all I can to be in your guys' hair all the time. You're gonna see me around just because I can't get enough.
Mark Mariani, you did more than just make the team. You made an impression by doing it the right way.
Thank you, my friend. It was an honor. It's an honor to wear those colors, and I'm glad to be home.
The OTP with Mark Mariani. Amy Wells, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
We're back next week with another edition of the Official Titans Podcast.